You're listening to Skylights with Ariel on WUVT FM 90.7 Blacksburg. We're in the middle of Radiothon. It's the last day. If you haven't made a pledge yet, we urge you to do that during this show. Would be great. You can call us up. We have three people now waiting, 540-231-9888. Or you can pledge securely online, www.wuvt.vt.edu. We have all kinds of, not prizes, but little reminders that you pledge to WUVT. You can pledge a dollar, $1,000. It's up to you. We take cash, check, passport, Hokie passport, and all major credit cards. We're doing a tribute to Windham Hill. Right now, underneath, is Wimmerton's Close Cover from the album of the same name. Before that, you heard Montrose, Skywriting from Sign Language, and a little bit of George Winston, Ocean Waves from Winter into Spring, and Big Thing in the Sky by the founder of William Hill, William Ackerman. Thank you for tuning us in and making us a part of your Sunday. Enjoy. have one more tune for you from Windham Hill coming up, something I never heard before. I think you're going to like it. It's got, it's going out to Michael and Hazel. It's got all kinds of hammer dulcimer in it. Seemed like an appropriate thing. Going out to Fred as well. Thank you for all of the calls and all of the pledges. We appreciate it. You were just listening to David Qualey, Soliloquy, the name of the album. Steffi Walden before that, who lives up here from Windham Hill, 25 years of guitar. And Billy Oske and Michael Odomhelm from Night Noise. Puck Fair before that, Moon Dance from Fair Play. And Paul McCandless, Eyebright from Hearsay. We've been doing all Windham Hill artists here on the Skylight Show today for the Radiothon. Stay tuned, find out how we're doing with Radiothon. And you've got Talk at the Table next with Andy Morikawa. Thank you for making us a part of your Sunday. You are listening to WUVT-FM, 90.7 Blacksburg. And, of course, we do take all forms of payment. You can go online, www.wuvt.vt.edu, or you can call us, 231-9888. Have a great day.
It's Sunday, and you're listening to Talk at the Table. I'm your host, Andy Morikawa. You're listening to us on WUVT-FM, 90.7 Blacksburg. Today's show, we are going to rebroadcast last week's interview with Bob Summers, who is the founder of TechPad, a co-working place in downtown Blacksburg, located over PK's, and also a founder of 460 Angels, an investment group that encourages and supports new high-tech entrepreneurs. During the breaks, we are going to be talking about Radiothon. This is the last day of Radiothon, and we're asking you to help us bring it home. Twice a year, we go to you, the public, and ask for your support for WUVT. We are a nonprofit radio station, student-run, community-supported. And this is a week that we undertake twice a year to ask for your support. So let's begin with the interview with Bob Summers, and we'll be right back.
You are the only one.
It's Sunday, and you're listening to Talk at the Table on WUVT FM 90.7 Blacksburg. WUVT FM is Virginia Tech's student-run, community-supported radio station for the New River Valley community. Thank you for your support. I'm your host, Andy Morikawa, here in the studio with my co-host for today's show, Eric Hodges. Eric is a doctoral student, a Marine Corps vet, and member of the Community Voices team that organizes and produces the Community Voices speaker series by Virginia Tech's Institute for Policy and Governance. We're coming to you from studios in Squire Student Center on the campus of Virginia Tech. On Talk at the Table, our guests help us understand the rich, creative diversity of the New River Valley community. The discourse here is civil, and the guests are all neighbors in place and spirit. Our guest today is Bob Summers. He's a high-tech entrepreneurial evangelist and a cheerleader, and he is going to be speaking at the Lyric Theater on Tuesday, March the 27th at 7 p.m. Bob calls himself a serial entrepreneur who specializes in internet software companies for the consumer and enterprise markets. He'll speak about Project Blacksburg, the growing of an open source community. Welcome to Talk at the Table, Bob.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay, Bob, this is Eric. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Glad to be here.
Thanks. So for Community Voices, we have sort of a set of questions that we try to ask, but we also want the conversation to be as organic as possible. So if you have a story or an anecdote or something like that that comes up, feel free to sort of go off on that tangent and we'll go where it leads. One of the first questions that we have is about relationships and how, as a leader, when you come into a community, how do you go about building relationships while still sort of honoring the culture and the values of those people in the community?
Yeah, so I think you're talking about making change in a large community, and I think that building sincere relationships with as many people as you can is really, really important.
Right.
And it takes a lot of effort and a lot of energy to do so, to have coffee, to have lunches, to earn the respect and trust of others. But if you have a big vision to make large amounts of change, you're going to end up ruffling feathers in the community. And I can tell you, for me, it's not something that I expected to encounter, like ruffling of feathers. But there absolutely were some times where in the process of trying to change our investor ecosystem and our entrepreneurial ecosystem, that there were a number of individuals and organizations that weren't necessarily ready for that change.
Right.
But over time, and by forming kind of the right partners, not necessarily kind of conscious strategic decisions, but just in general, maybe being a good person, a good community member, and having that sincerity,
right.
Those partners were able to help me through some of those tougher times, and I would expect that, you know, with any change, there's always challenges ahead. So for me, it's about getting people that are like-minded together,
right.
And it's definitely about open thought and open collaboration.
Yeah,
kind of siloed, closed environments, but thinking, you know, I can share any of my ideas. I'm not afraid of someone else taking credit for them, or even
right.
along the way, not even trying to get attribution for those ideas.
Right.
Because I think that's where the danger comes in, and like where fear in the area of those feelings come in is,
right.
You know, for me, I'm not about attribution anyway. I'd just like to see this community grow so that it's, one, it's an exciting place for me to work and live.
Right.
But also, it's fun to do.
Great. And you did your undergrad here as well, right, Bob?
Yeah, so I did my undergraduate in computer engineering at Virginia Tech,
okay.
which is also where I met my wife.
Okay. I know something that you're sort of big on and has influenced you in a lot of ways is the Virginia Tech Entrepreneurial Club. What sort of is your involvement with the Entrepreneur Club at Virginia Tech?
Yeah, so about 4 years ago, I became an advisor. I felt that one of the ways in which we could make change, so the fundamental idea is that we have or we can build a very, very rich entrepreneurial community here. We right. already have an existing one, and it's strong, but my view is that it can be better.
Okay.
As with anything, they can always be improved.
Sure.
But the thought was that we need to start where the seeds and ideas and where entrepreneurs begin, which is with the students.
Right.
And there was a club, and it was called Elite, E-L-I-T-E, which in itself I wasn't super happy about the name
right.
For a number of reasons. But, you know, I kept quiet about that aspect initially just to see where this club could go. And the club was based in the business school, and when I went to the, I would go to the club meetings to try to learn where they were going, where they were headed. They were fairly disorganized. They didn't have a real focus, but they wanted to talk about entrepreneurship.
Sure.
And I was surprised, and talk about change is that I realized right away is that I asked the club members. Which degrees they had had, like what were
right.
their backgrounds.
Right.
And it was 100% finance, accounting, all business majors. And I proposed to them that they should invite engineers
right.
to the club meetings.
Yeah.
And they said, well, why would we want to do that? There's no entrepreneurs there. And so I said, well, I'll share with you some data, and maybe it will change your mind,
yeah.
which is that over 90% of the entrepreneurs in Blacksburg have engineering degrees.
Right.
You're missing out.
Yeah.
And that year, students didn't quite get it.
Right.
But the next year, students started to get it. And then finally, 2 years ago, finally encouraged the leader. I encouraged the leader of the club to do two things.
Right.
One was do something tangible, which turned out to be a pitch presentation challenge. So
right.
and second was to find his replacement.
Right.
So those are the
right.
two things. Like, your job is to get the club to do something. Let's have a pitch clinic, not a pitch clinic, but a pitch competition.
Right.
Have a pitch competition. And secondly, let's find a replacement so we can take the work that you've done and
right.
build upon it.
Right.
And he did those two things successfully. His name is Tony. Tony successfully brought together, I think it was 8 students that presented in front of a small room of about 20 people.
Right.
In Lytton Reeves Hall, I remember it was, and myself and Ken Moretti, another entrepreneurial cheerleader in our community, was there, and we judged these, and we awarded the top prize, which I don't think there was any award money. I think it was just
right.
bragging rights at that point.
Yeah.
And then the next thing he did, Tony was an entrepreneur himself. He actually left college to begin a company in Taiwan,
okay.
and via Skype tapped the shoulder of Nathan Lotka, another student entrepreneur who'd shown some promise
okay.
in leadership. And so the Entrepreneur Club, at that point, Nathan was very kind of excited about
mm-hmm.
this opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Very entrepreneurial. He was a sophomore at the time. And he started to meet with me and approach me and work on, like, what can we do? And so I proposed to him, let's take this pitch competition concept to the next level. There is the path that MIT, so let's look at, like, what is the best competition in the world?
Right.
And it's largely recognized as the MIT 100K. So they give
mm-hmm.
away two $50,000 prizes, one in social entrepreneurship and the other in just pure business. And
right.
It's open to any team that has at least one MIT student on the team is how that's run. But the history of the MIT 100K actually started with the MIT E-Club in 1984.
Right.
The E-Club started a 1K competition where they'd
right.
give away $1,000 prizes. And that ultimately grew to 10 $1,000 prizes in scientific categories like atomic, energy, you name it, biology, et cetera.
Right.
And so I proposed to Nathan that, what about this idea? What if we did a competition like that? And we reached out to our friends at MIT and said, would you help us get this thing off the ground?
Yeah.
And he thought that was a good idea. And we worked this summer. He was living in Northern Virginia, so we emailed over the summer, produced a white paper proposal.
Right.
And the concept of the VT5K was born.
Right.
And the VT5K would give away five $1,000 prizes in categories such as energy, software, medical, nanotechnology, and then robotics, and then this year we did miscellaneous. So I just named six, but that's because we've done it 2 years, or the club's done it two years, and the categories have changed.
Sure.
But that the club itself actually got really behind that idea, as well as sponsorship. The local companies were very interested in engaging the club.
Right.
And Nathan opened up the semester. This was the fall semester of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
With the game plan,
okay,
which is this semester we're going to run
the 5K.
The 5K.
Okay.
We're going to raise $5,000. We're going to promote this event,
right?
And we're going to award some student teams and hopefully build up some activity.
And for those who aren't familiar with how a pitch competition works, or could you explain a little bit about how that works?
There's a myriad of ways that pitch competitions can be run.
Yeah.
I've seen them. I've seen one-minute pitch competitions where someone gets up and there's a series of 30 one-minute pitches.
Okay.
So in 30 minutes, you've heard 30 company ideas, and literally the audience is asked which one was best.
Right.
Right? And,
yeah.
And it's done by cheers.
That's cool.
Right? That's the simplest form.
Very democratic.
That's the simplest form. And then all the way up to kind of the granddaddy of them all, the MIT 100K.
Right.
Where you have a series of semifinalists, pre-finalists, and finalists. So usually the team is producing a business plan or an executive summary of some form. Usually it's a formal written process. So you're going to build a business plan. And it goes through this process where they refine it and it's judged. And ultimately there's a winner and probably a co-winner that's awarded some cash value.
Great.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk at the Table on WUVT FM 90.7 Blacksburg. I'm your host, Andy Morikawa. We'll be right back after a short break. And you're listening to a rebroadcast of our interview last week with Bob Summers. This week it is Radiothon. This is the last day of Radiothon, and we're asking for your support of publicly supported, student-run community radio here on WUVT FM 90.7. And in this segment, we've just learned that we have a donor out there who's willing to match your gifts up to $250. So we have a chance of raising maybe $500 or more in this hour of Talk at the Table. What do your contributions go to? What does your support mean? It means that you can help us with costs for licensing, maintenance services, upkeep, upgrading equipment, replacing equipment. Virginia Tech supports WUVT, of course, and provides electricity and power for the studios and for our transmitter. And, of course, provides space here in Squire's Student Center where our studios are located. If you want to make a donation, you can go online. Go to our website at www.wuvt.vt.edu and just click on the Pledge Online button. Or you can give us a call if you want to use your Hokie passport, you want to send us a check or cash. Just call us at 540-231-9888, and Chris or one of the other folks here at the station would be glad to take your call. And again, we've got a matching gift of $250 from someone in the community who wants to support and encourage folks in the community to provide support for your WUVT-FM 90.7. Some premiums, just a quick rundown. For $5, you get a bumper sticker. For $20, you get a Local Zone CD. For $35, you get a thermal travel mug and all of the previous premiums. For $60, all those premiums plus a WUVT t-shirt. $100 brings you a messenger bag. $125, a Woovit Zip hoodie and all the prior prizes. And if you get up to $500, friends, you can have an overnight stay at the Inn at Virginia Tech and a meal for a couple of folks. So give us a ring at 540-231-9888 or check us out on our website. You can just Google WUVT-FM and it'll take you right to our site and click on Make a Donation Online. And again, this is WUVT-FM 90.7 Blacksburg. You're listening to Talk at the Table, and we are rebroadcasting our great interview from last week with Bob Summers, a high-tech entrepreneur, founder of TechPad, and a founder of 460 Angels, an investment group that is helping to support and encourage high-tech entrepreneurs in our Blacksburg community. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to Talk at the Table. I'm your host, Andy Morikawa, where technology and quality of life and entrepreneurship converge. Bob Summers sees rich opportunity for a surge in Blacksburg's economic development. And to that end, Bob founded 460 Angels, a local group of over 30 accredited investors in the Blacksburg-Roanoke region. He then started TechPad, a 6,000-square-foot co-working space in downtown Blacksburg, serving over a dozen software companies with 30-plus young entrepreneurs. Let's listen to him continuing his conversation with my co-host, Eric Hodges.
Thanks, Andy. Bob, I want to get to 460 Angels and TechPad, but before we do that, I want to back up a bit to sort of a remarkable statement you made earlier about the statistics of 90% of the entrepreneurs in Blacksburg being engineers. And one of the questions that we have in Community Voices is concerning capacities and the capacities that people need to be leaders in the community, to be social entrepreneurs and things like that. So I guess it's a two-part question. First, why do you think it's the case that 90% of the entrepreneurs are engineers? And two, what are the capacities that an individual needs to be a successful entrepreneur and probably specifically a social entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I think that the engineering element certainly connects directly with the competency of the university,
right,
which is that it's a very strong engineering school.
Right.
So we draw, the university draws its talent from, you know, a world audience and attracts bright people,
sure,
that have not only technical aspirations but business aspirations. And the ones that are successful quickly find paths to revenue, mm-hmm, and that tends to be early on in research. So as a research institution, if you're an engineer and a PhD student, you might find a path to revenue by doing an SBIR, a Small Business and Innovation Grant.
Sure.
From the Department of Army or NIH or other places.
Right.
We're actually very good at that, and the faculty understand that funding mechanism,
yep,
very clearly, and they pass that on to their PhD students, their master's students. So we have just a plethora of successful entrepreneurs in our community that have teams of 10 or more with revenues, you know, well north of $1 million to $5 million that are playing in that space,
right,
where they were graduate students, they discovered something, they found a funding source, usually government in nature, mm-hmm. military in nature,
mm-hmm.
Then there was a place for them to go work. So the Corporate Research Center was there with a number of resources to help them kind of sit down and get started. And so that probably explains a lot of it.
Right.
The other thing is, if you look, and this is where we'll talk about change in
okay.
terms of change. What we talk a little bit about it, but our business school and the other colleges at Virginia Tech have typically catered to big consulting firms.
Right.
And their curriculum as a whole has not been entrepreneurial in nature. They might offer a few classes that have an entrepreneurial title.
Right.
But in the past, they have not brought together a cohesive plan, as well as there's been very little collaboration across all of these different departments.
Right.
So we don't have for example, we don't yet have like a minor in entrepreneurship that an engineering student could take.
Right.
Or even cross-functional teams between College of Science, business, and engineering,
mm-hmm.
Whereby you know, you can graduate with a capstone class that's focused on entrepreneurship or commercialization of technology.
Right.
These are the kind of things that are happening at Stanford, University of Texas. Bob Metcalf is leading the charge down there, where they've actually done a partnership between the
right.
College of Science, the business
right.
school, and the engineering school.
Right.
Now, he sits in the engineering school, but the point there is that they're working together. They've broken down their silos.
Right.
And they've decided it doesn't matter who gets credit for entrepreneurship. We're doing it, because if
right.
we don't, we're going to die.
Right.
And, you know, in the next 10 years, the whole education system is really going to be changed and innovated, and this is part of that. The silos must be broken down, and that is a challenge for Virginia Tech. Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And it's being discussed.
Right.
I'm encouraged by some of the things that I see.
Right.
In terms of some of that activity. It's better than it has been in the past, but we have a long way to go.
I guess the billion-dollar question is, how do you go about doing that? I mean, we talk about breaking down the silos and having individuals not so concerned about attribution and having the project sort of in their own name, but that's a really difficult task. And what are some of the strategies that you've seen at these places at UT Austin and Stanford that have been successful in helping to do that?
It seems to be, at least in UT Austin's case, that they brought in an outsider,
mm-hmm.
and that the people knew they couldn't help themselves.
Right.
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 That effectively we can't do it. So let's bring in somebody else and tell them this is your goal. Your
right.
goal is actually to build an ecosystem. We know it can't be done in a silo. You have carte blanche.
Mm-hmm.
And we definitely have not taken that step yet.
Right.
At this university.
Right.
There is definitely issues. I mean, and some of this is just the entire incentive system. So it's from the top down.
Right.
How is it? I mean, we have our budgets are retracting. They're putting more students into classes.
Sure.
Why does a faculty member want to work across, you know, these borders? There's
right.
zero incentive.
Right.
They're overtasked.
Right.
And you know, so we've got to solve that problem along
mm-hmm.
the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we and maybe that's I don't know. It's a big question.